All right, this is a continuation of the previous interview with Ms. Hume and Mr. Pino. Ma'am, I know that we spoke about about him being stressed out, about him being depressed. That you know of, was he on any medication, antidepressants?
Not that I know of, that he took Cialis and had a testosterone implant in December, wanting to feel better.
Had he seen a psychologist, a psychiatrist? Have you guys seen any counselors, anything like that?
Mitch had access to a counselor. I don't know the pedigree. I don't know if it was PhD or just a regular counselor that he had talked to on the phone before years ago, just about things. And we had been at a clinic in Europe where he was seen by a psychiatrist. I believe it was a psychiatrist. I'd have to look at those records. And they did put him on a depression. It was like a natural medicine. I have no idea what it is. He took it for a short time, didn't feel good, and went off of it.
So while at this clinic in Europe, you met with he met with a psychologist?
Yeah, so we met separately. I wasn't in the meeting with him, but this is something that he told me. So I was not there. You know, I was with him at the clinic, but not in the room when he was getting these things. They thought he was possibly depressed. He was getting treatment to help him . He wanted to feel like the best man he could be.
And you said that they gave him medication, like some holistic medication?
Yeah, I don't know what it is, what it's called, where, I don't know. But he was on it. I didn't even know he was on this until later. It came out that they had given him something. I asked him. He just seemed a little different. I didn't feel that he was acting depressed, and he really didn't at that point either. But it didn't agree with him. He chose to stop taking it.
How long ago was this?
So we went to that clinic in June. So he would have taken it mid-July or late July that he stopped taking it. Mid-July.
Do you know the name of this clinic?
I can get that for you.
Please, if you could, that'd be great. All right, and that's as far as like depression medication, that would be the only thing that you're aware of.
Mitch and I have taken all kinds of supplements, vitamins, you know, I don't know. Mitch could have gotten anything by himself that I'm unaware of. He's very independent in a lot of things he did, so totally possible he could have. But I don't know of anything prescribed that I'm off the top of my head here.
Okay. Yeah, if you could, please, whenever you get a chance, if you can get me the name of that clinic, that'd be very helpful. And as far as you know, he hasn't been diagnosed clinically with depression, any other, anything else?
You know, the doctors there did their thing with him. Mitch has gone to doctors for hormones. He got the testosterone, so, right. You know, he wasn't feeling his best. So I don't know how you can interpret that many different ways. So Mitch has gone on, he's gone on hormones to feel better. So yes, he has sought hormone therapy.
Hormone treatment.
Yes, to feel better. So not feeling his best and not feeling well on many levels that made him do the hormone therapy. As many men in their 40s go on hormones.
Okay. All right, so I think that answers my questions. Thank you very much for that. As far as a cell phone, are you going to be able to give me that cell phone, ma'am?
We will give you the cell phone, Max. Just how long will you need it? It's valuable to Deborah from two perspectives, obviously.
Okay.
She was never able to actually get it downloaded because she doesn't have the passwords to the iCloud. Number two, obviously it's a keepsake.
Sure. That night you gave me the password to the phone.
Yeah, I don't have all the iCloud stuff. The password getting into it, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the issue
with the iCloud password that you don't have.
Just to back it all up and all that.
Okay.
iTunes, and I mean, we shared iTunes, so I think it's a valuable thing.
No, absolutely. I can understand that.
All kinds
of
pictures.
Do you need it anytime, like, immediately? Like, I would try to get it back to you by the end of this week. If that's
that
too long.
That would be great.
Yeah?
That would be great.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll try to get it back to you by the end of this week. The iCloud password, I don't think that we would even be able to get that. There's a lot of, all right. But I got the password to the phone, 2833, you said, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If any issues arise, I'll get with you immediately.
Okay.
All right. But I would try to get it back even before the end of this week.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Mm-hmm.
When are you planning on having the funeral for Mitch?
Well, I first have to get the body. You know, his.
We'll talk about.
So we'll talk privately about that.
Okay.
And,
do you need it before the funeral? The phone.
I would like it before the funeral.
Well, what I mean is
invitations and things like
contacts
that.
And stuff like
that. Yeah, the sooner the better. I do have many contacts, but I certainly, Mitch was very loved by many people, and I want to honor those people and honor Mitch.
So, 6S?
6S.
The phone? iPhone 6?
Oh, yes, yes.
6S or 6? Any idea?
I'm not techie. It's the big one, right? Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not.
It's not. It's okay.
iPhone 6.
6. Bigger than mine.
And what's the phone number for this phone, ma'am?
801-318-6888.
Okay. I need you to read this for me, please. Basically, I'm asking for your permission to search this phone, okay? And the only way, I don't have a serial number for it right now, but the only way I could describe it is a white iPhone 6 belonging to Mitch Hume, phone number 801-318-6888. That should, and that should cover and all contents within. That should cover this phone. Is there any objections to that? If you could please sign here.
I don't have any objections.
Yeah.
And print underneath it. I would really appreciate it.
Okay. And so today is the 7th, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay, so I just put 3/7/16. What time is it?
12:46.
PM
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate it. I'm going to leave this for you.
I hope it's helpful to you. I think you're going to...
Okay, and now with Mr. Pino.
Go ahead, take that.
Mr. Pino, how long have you known Mitch?
Actually, I've known him for close to 20 years. We were in the same industry together.
And I got to thank you because you're the one that approached me. You said that you wanted to speak to me about this investigation, that you might have some information that could shed some light on this investigation. So go ahead. I don't even know what questions to ask you because I don't know what your extent, your involvement is.
So having listened to this portion of it, Deborah's conversation, let me just also give you some context.
Okay.
And it's really, by the way, not necessarily the particular reason that I was going to communicate to you, but just because... I think it would be helpful to your understanding, literally until the recession. So we're talking about 2007. Mitch had an unbelievable track record. He was a multimillionaire, was extremely successful at everything he did, owned a company, several companies out in Utah, had massive amount of real estate, and literally by every estimation would be considered an incredible success story. Add to that the fact that he was dynamic on stage as a speaker, as a motivator. He was just extremely well regarded at every level as a good businessman, a good entrepreneur, a good speaker, a good motivator. Just committed, godly man. The Great Recession happened, and based on a series of hits, he lost his business, and he liquidated voluntarily a great deal of the real estate in order to make sure that everybody, all his creditors, were made whole. So he liquidated his entire storage chain of storage units in order to pay off the creditors. In addition to that, he gave a substantial amount of money to his brothers, and very specifically one particular brother, to put into apartment buildings, which were originally managed by his brothers. That created a scenario of not only failed investments in the real estate, but on top of that, judgments against him. That also, for purposes of this discussion, began a series of failures that Mitch initiated. So first he has the background that's enormously successful for literally close to 20 years. He liquidates the byproduct of that money that he made in order to pay off those creditors. He then gets involved with the apartment buildings with family members.
Mm-hmm.
He loses that money. Then he goes into a series of additional business ventures, every single one of which turns out to fail.
Over how many?
Over this 5-year period of time.
And about how many do you think? Several?
Well, the business ventures, he was being hired in as CEO to run these business ventures.
Just an estimate.
1, 2, 3, 4, really 5. 5 major activities. And I'm gonna tie this together for you, Max, in a second. I just want you to see the context.
Sure.
So it's just one after another for a guy that had no history of failure, coming in with massive success, laud, making people millions of dollars of money, of profit. And then recession hits. He liquidates his real estate to pay off those creditors. Then has the failure with the apartment buildings. Not only did they fail, with family members, but on top of that, not only did he lose money on that, but he also ended up with judgments against him because of it. Then he goes through a series of business ventures, five total, every single one of which turned out to be a failure. He either got fired, or he had a falling out, or whatever. The most recent one that Deborah was referring to was the one where he had Hume Investments, which was going to be the fund. That was the fund where he would get accredited investors to invest in his fund, and he would in turn take those investments and he would invest in other people's funds. So they manage the assets, his relationship is with his investors. Okay. Because he had this rat issue and black mold issue and all of that, during the time that he could have been seeking out investors, he was trying to put this house together because of the black mold and the rats, etc. That fund he was going to be investing in closed out. So Mitch at that point, and now we're pretty current, by the way, a month and a half ago, Mitch at that point closes on the house. He's finally finished with the house. He then turns around and realizes that the fund is closed out. And now he looks at the entire scenario, talks to the fund people. They have not only, at this point, not absorbed the investments in their fund, they're not even sure when they're going to open up a new fund so that Mitch can go out and solicit investments for them. He doesn't even know when they're going to start.
So all the people that invested in him?
No, there was only one.
Okay.
There was only one that invested in him. Then he got involved with the black mold rat issue.
Right.
So he's now on hold during that entire time, fixing that.
Right.
Once that gets fixed, once we finally close, then he turns around to say, okay, let me get going now, only to find out that the fund is closed.
Right.
So now he has this beautiful website for Hume Investments. He has the fund documents, which we have put together for him. He's ready to go, and now he has nowhere to go. So
did that cause him owing people money?
No.
Okay.
No. There is no investment implication to it. What there was a disheartening implication to it. Because at that point, he really got... He was, for the very first time that I had seen, so not Mitch that I sent him a note and I said, you know what, it's time for you to come up to Orlando and visit with me. It's not about billing time. It's on my dime. You just need to spend some Pinot time. So when he came up to Orlando, which would have been about 2 weeks prior.
I think it was 1 week.
1 week prior, and I'll be glad to get to the date, Max. Came up to Orlando, we sat in my office around my round table, and I just let him dump. And during that period of time that he was dumping, it became clear to me that, in the best way that I can that he described it to me is, he felt that all of the good things in his life were in the past. And I said to him, and obviously I didn't get to a point where I'm thinking suicide. I got to a point where I'm thinking my friend needs a pep talk. And so I said, are you kidding? I said, the greatest business I ever built. I didn't even start till I was 51. I said, Winston Churchill didn't even get his lucky break until he was 60. I said, you have tremendous to look forward to, and so forth and so on. That conversation, though, clearly indicated what his perspective was. And it's within that context that he was seeing life. Let me just kind of give you the other side of it. As I told him that day, I said, you know, Mitch, the problem that you have is that you put your heart and soul into every single thing you do. And that was the Mitch that I knew. So when he had a new idea or he had a new opportunity, it would be heart and soul. It's a cannonball. I'm coming down on this one as a cannonball. The problem with that is that it takes your entire emotional energy into it, so that when it fails, you've now invested all of that energy. And Mitch was so motivated, so self-motivated, so driven, that he would get up and he'd do it again, and he'd do it again. Over a five-year period of time, he did it five times. And every single time, you know, it ended up the same way. So I said, you know what you need to do, Mitch, this year, you know, last year I gave him some words to guide him, and this year I said, here's your word for this year. Your word for this year is moderation. You need to be moderate with respect to what you do, because you create such energy. I used to call it one point in time, I forgot the word, secondhand stress. He was so energetic. He would create stress for everybody else around him because he was the one that was putting so much energy in. I used to say to the people in my office, tell you what, when Mitch calls, you know, you don't do what he says, you put it down, you let me know, we need to moderate it, because he was so impulsive that if it's in his mind, he's going to drive it and he's going to do it. And I said that what you've done is you've now created this five-year pattern of having done this to a point that now you're exhausted. You're emotionally exhausted. That's okay. You're emotionally exhausted. Take a breather. Allow yourself to just simply finish off what needs to be done for the house. We will regroup here. And when he left, he felt better for obviously a period of time. Now, I have noticed in my conversations with Mitch that there is this almost insane intensity when he does things, to the point that no normal human being could even process it. I mean, he'll come in and he'll be sitting there and he'll have six people and there are nine things in his ASAP list and they all have to be done by tomorrow. And the function that I served as both his lawyer and his counselor is, I was the one that always did that. But I never thought of it in terms of anything other than Mitch. That's just the way he is. I never thought about it as being a bipolar, here's his manic state, because until he came to Orlando, I had never seen a depressed state. I hadn't seen the other side of it. And it was only when that happened that I realized that, gee, if I had known that there might have been a physiological foundation for this, I would have been doing more than just giving him a pep talk. I would have been suggesting that maybe he gets some meds and maybe he moderates his behavior, not based upon conversation, but based upon, you know, medical assistance. Jesus. You know, real pharmaceuticals. So I guess I wanted to express to you, number one, you know, in my mind, was there a context for him to commit suicide? No. Not that I would have envisioned, but obviously something happened, right? But secondly, it would not have been because of his debts. It wouldn't have been because of the judgment. This was a judgment that we had. There are two major judgments. We've had them under control. We handled one of them. The other one was under control and management. He was being threatened by some BS credit card, which was nothing. It was pocket change. In Mitch's terms, I mean, it was a $95,000 credit card, which was being negotiated at $15,000 over 3 years. I mean, it was nothing. It wasn't about that. It was about this series of failures. It was on the aspirational side. He couldn't see what he was going to do. That every single thing he had done, the light was pulled out from under him. That was the part that was gut-wrenching to him, not the fact that he had some debts that, if anything, over the 5-year period of time, we cleaned all that stuff up, except for a couple that weren't even an issue at this point, including, by the way, the litigation with Patricia. We talked about Patricia earlier. There was litigation. We went out to Utah. We mediated, did a mediation. It was done, settled, and it was all, it was history. And he was so happy that it was behind him. So none of that stuff. But I think that the inability to be able to see a future, because every single one, including his baby, you know, this human investments, none of them had worked out since the time that he was enormously successful. So I wanted to kind of create that context.
No, it definitely paints a picture. When do you think he started that business with his brothers, with the apartment complexes?
Well, maybe 07, 08. I was not involved in that. I was just involved in the cleanup of it.
Okay, but that was around 08?
I would say it was 08. It was post-recession.
He was very angry with them.
Yeah.
Through the years. It 08, caused him 09. A lot of stress and other family members.
I would say...
Great stress.
Yeah, I would say 2008, 2009 max. I'm sorry, the disadvantage of drinking water. I'll be right back.
I'll be right back too, because it's still...
So, in your opinion, when he came up to Orlando to talk with you, that, you know, he said that all good things in his life were behind him. That was about a week before this happened.
Yeah, I can actually give you the day.
Doesn't have to be the exact day, but
that was that prior Monday. I think it was a Monday or a Tuesday. Hold on.
And in your opinion, is if him committing suicide, it would not have been over debt. It would have been just over the continuous failed business ventures.
Yeah.
Couldn't get out of that funk.
Yeah, it was the 16th, February 16th. He was there for like 4 hours. It would have been the disheartenment, if that's a word, disheartenment, when you try and you try and you try and you try, number one, compounded by the intensity with which he tried. Because he put everything into what he did, everything. As you were listening to Deborah, you know, he wanted to be the best man. He wanted to be the best provider. He wanted to be the best partner. He wanted to be the best. And he put enormous pressure on himself. So, you know, half of the time my communication was, Mitch,
calm down, relax.
It's okay.
Okay.
All right, that's on one side.
Okay.
All right, there's one final side that I do want to just bring up. Every bit of that is consistent with, obviously, in retrospect, not proactively, or we would have been treating it very differently, but in retrospect, every one of those is consistent with a conclusion of a suicide. And if there's any possibility of something which would not end up being a suicide, I just want to bring to your attention one set of facts that may or may not have arisen primarily because of the noise of Mitch's family.
Mm-hmm.
And that is all of the information that's on the internet that has been posted by Elliot Bernstein. And you know the name, right? Elliot Bernstein. That really began approximately a week before Mitch's death. He had been trying to find out who closed on the house. And
Elliot
had, yeah. Primarily because of the fact that knowing that his penchant to post things on the internet and crazy stuff, just ridiculous stuff. So we concluded that the best thing we can do is buy the house with a land trust so that Mitch and Deborah's name were not on the public record, because we knew that the minute their name was on the public record, he would go after them, and now in the way that he has now, and it would be detrimental to Mitch's business. So we used a land trust. He tried very hard to figure out, and he finally found on the public records a land trust document that was not tied to anybody other than a woman that, by the name of Leilani, and she signed off on that document as a favor. They then began a series of harassing phone calls, they being Elliot and his accomplice, and posting all this stuff on the internet. It is remarkable to me, just from a just coincidental basis, that those things occurred within 3 days of Mitch's death. Now, I am not a conspiratorialist, and I'm completely outside my realm of competency at this point. And I believe with 99% confidence that the scenario that I just described to you is what actually happened. And it was a suicide premised on that. In the event that you really want to tie down your investigation as to any potential foul play having occurred, I would just suggest that you tie down the circumstances with respect to what's on the internet and whether that would potentially bear any relationship to any potential foul play.
Okay, so it's my understanding that Elliot's parents owned the house before.
Mm-hmm.
It's my understanding that Elliot is... he didn't get inheritance from his family, something like that. And he was pretty distraught about that. Does that sound familiar?
Oh, I mean, it all sounds familiar. Okay. But, of course, there's a lens within which that's seen. He had every right under the inheritance as all the rest of the siblings had.
Okay. The house was bought under a land trust in order to keep it private from anybody else, especially Elliot.
Well, had it not been for Elliot, Mitch never wouldn't have cared. It was only because of Elliot.
Only because of Elliot.
Oh, yeah.
Did Mitch know Elliot before that?
Yeah, because the reason it took us 9 months to close on this house was because Elliot kept filing lawsuits, stopping the sale from going through, which prevented them from getting title insurance. And it was only finally when the last of the appeals of the appeals of the appeals finally got rejected that we were able to close on the house. This otherwise would have been closed back in June.
So then, and please educate me, so then why the land trust to keep private if Elliot already knew that it was Mitch buying the house?
No, he didn't.
Oh, he didn't. Okay.
No, this was all, it was only after the closing and with the land trust. I mean, I even used ISL to make sure that it wasn't going to be traced. And it's just because of Leilani's name that it ended up getting traced. And the second phone call, Elliot knew that it was a fellow by the name of Mitch Uhem, is how he pronounced it, Mitch Uhem, who bought the house. But it took until that second phone call. But that second phone call occurred the week before he died.
Elliot,
I knew nothing about any of this. I didn't know. Mitch never told me anything. I didn't know.
Okay.
I know now, seeing what's posted on the internet, you know.
So these people never showed up to his house after you guys moved in?
I was concerned. I made my concerns known through the process. This Elliot guy, again, we've never met him, but he appeared crazy from the things he was doing, mm-hmm. and irrational, and that's why we did the house and the land trust. I wasn't even totally comfortable actually purchasing the house, but that was not my final decision. So,
I mean, right now there have been two orders that have been literally just issued against Elliot as of the last week. Like last week, two more orders. He's been thrown out every single one over like a 9 month period of time. But his posts on the internet are so, I mean, the most recent post, you know, three deaths, what's going on type of posts, which are just, they're terrible.
And untrue. I don't believe.
Well, he's talking about his own parents.
Yeah, but, okay. I don't even think they died in the house. But.
Yeah, I don't know. So okay. In any event, believe me, I'm not saying anything other than if you want to tie down any component of the investigation, just take a look at his posts.
Mr. Pino, on the day of the 23rd, where were you?
In my office.
In Orlando?
Yeah.
The whole day?
Yeah, the whole day.
On the day of the 23rd, did you come to the West Palm area at all?
No. No, as a matter of fact, that's why I know the exact time that Deborah called me. It was 4 o'clock. I was in my office, and Deborah called me on my cell phone with Mitch's cell phone. So I had it on the desk, because Mitch usually would call me on my landline.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, but he would call me on the cell phone too. But I pushed speaker, and Kathy and Paula were there. Kathy's my assistant, Paula's administrative assistant too. And they were there, and Deborah was very upset. Because I said, hey, Mitch. And she said, no, Larry, it's not Mitch, it's Deborah. Hey, Deborah. And she said, I'm concerned. This is Mitch's phone. It was here. He never leaves without his phone. I said, no. So then we had a conversation, and I said, you know, could have gone out for a run. We made some suggestions, go take a look at this, take a look at that. And then she called back a second time. And it's the second time, I think, that I said, listen, you know, for all we know, he could be in a car accident somewhere, check the hospitals. And then it was the third conversation, which would have been when the investigators were there that we found out that he had, that they found his body.
Deborah, do you remember having any visitors in the day before, the day of?
No.
No visitors at all?
No, especially because I had that chemical peel over my face. I didn't, want in the house. No. And Mitch would conduct business. He loved going to the club and doing his meetings, and it was very beautiful.
He did his
there.
Business at the club?
Yeah, most of the time. I mean, he did business at the house too, but we weren't having people at the house so much. He loved going to have lunch there and sitting by the pool.
Now, just from the way you describe your relationship with your son, it seems like he was there probably more often than anybody else, your son.
Recently, yeah.
When was the last time he was there?
I can't give you the exact date right now, but...
A week ago, 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks before, 2.5 weeks. I believe we played tennis last time we were together, and Mitch had played too. And we invited him to come. I think usually he comes on Sunday. It was Valentine's Day. He didn't come on Valentine's Day Sunday. That's probably when he would have.
All right, do you guys know a gentleman by the name of Al Schuler? Al Schuler?
Michael. Yeah.
Who's that?
He's a recent friend of Mitch's.
Okay. On the day of, did he come to the house?
No.
You didn't see him at all?
No. Did he say he came to the house?
I'm just covering the bases.
No, I think Michael said he had a workout planned with Mitch.
Okay.
They would meet at the club. I don't even know if Michael, if he'd been to the house, I don't know about it. No.
Does he live in the development?
No. But Mitch would have put him on the guest list to work out.
At the club?
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, Michael mentioned something to me about a workout. I don't know about that. Mitch scheduled his, and that was outside of me, whatever. He did those things.
That night, you called Mr. Bernstein, not Elliot, the other Mr. Bernstein.
No, Ted. Yeah, and again, timing, I'm not looking at the time I make. Phone calls, this was very,
You called crazy. Mr. Bernstein.
Because he was Ted. Mitch was supposed to have a meeting with him.
But that Mr. Because I even went to his house.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not the same Ted. That's not.
Yeah, that's the same Ted.
Ted Bernstein.
Yeah.
The one I'm talking about is Elliot Bernstein.
Okay.
That's his brother.
Through the process of buying the house, there was so many things that needed to happen and fixing up the house and mold and all that. And we got to know Ted, and Mitch and Ted became friends. And Ted invited Mitch and I to come to a seminar he was doing. We thought we could help him out. And Mitch and Ted were putting together a partnership and building towards an event.
And the internet, the reason that that's relevant to this whole thing is that Ted has been maligned by Elliot on the internet. You should just take a look at YouTube. Yeah. Elliot Bernstein on YouTube. He rips into his brother Ted, who defrauded him and stole from him and all this. That has hurt Ted's business.
Do you know how their parents died?
No, I have no clue. Okay. Yeah, so just to finish that one thought though. So for the purpose of what we didn't want to do, because Mitch was starting this investment company, we didn't want to have another scenario where Elliot now had another target, the guy that bought his parents' house. Mm-hmm. So that's why the land trust thing.
Okay. Right. Anything else?
No, I don't think so.
Definitely paints a better picture.
Okay.
I really appreciate your time. Thank you, sir.
Absolutely.
Ms. Hume, anything that you can say and think of?
No.
Okay.
Okay. Can I have a card?
Sure.
You have a card there?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Ms. Hume, do you want my card?
Yes. Is it stopped?
No, not yet. All right, this is going to conclude the statement. The time is now 1:20 p.m.